On To The Point, we try to make sense of the policy debates and the political sideshows on the campaign trail.
Ted Cruz wrapping the bacon around the semi-automatic weapon to cook it.
I understand that trade is not a sexy issue.
Nobody knows where the Republican Party is going to land. I mean, it's kind of like a country road. No one knows where it will end.
In many ways, Marco Rubio is the Michael Jordan of American politics.
I'm Warren Olney. To The Point has you covered for the 2016 campaign. Find the To The Point podcast on KCRW's iTunes page.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's been a minute since my guest, director F. Gary Gray, has been. He was last here for his film, The Negotiator. He's made a couple films since then, but 20 years ago, he made a little film called Friday that really was the beginning of refining, bringing an honest version of the hip-hop experience to film. He countered that film the summer of 2015 with a little movie called Straight Outta Compton.
Yeah.
And it's so good to see you back here, Gary. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about Straight Outta Compton for a minute before we get back to, to Friday and the films that fell in between. Because before we got started, I was saying to you that the film really is kind of breathless in the first hour. It really packs in a lot, and it's almost a camera moving basically left to right as if you're reading it. There's a lot of that kind of motion. That's the idea of almost like we'll watch the movie from a moving car.
Wow. I'm going to take that as a compliment. You know, the one thing I'd say about that is it's the structure of how the story happened. You know, you can imagine these guys, they lived in the neighborhood, they had a dream, they made a hit record, and their lives took off. And it was not until the group broke up that things start to kind of go in a different way, and that affects the pacing. You know,
when isn't that part when they break up that has kind of a three-act structure? You compress that into that part of the movie with bam, bam, bam.
Well, you know, that's part of it. You know, there's obviously things I love to stuff more story in there. There's so much story, and it's so, I think, good that, you know, all the elements that they went through all the elements that we could have put in the story. But part of the reason why it moves fast is because it's how it happened. They blew up, and it was controversial, and they went on tour, and it went really fast for these guys. And the original group only stayed together for a short amount of time, actually.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I guess I find myself, as I'm watching it, being reminded of that period, how because there was nothing else like that before. I mean, there's nothing else like hip-hop in that way, because the L.A. version of hip-hop was very different from the East Coast version of it.
Definitely.
And there was this kind of weird, and you touch on this in the audio we hear as the Universal logo is coming up, the kind of, how best to put this, the mainstream media fear of that world. And it's funny for those of us who like watch that stuff and then would go out and see them play. It's like the audiences were very different than what we were told about them in mainstream media. The audiences loved that stuff. And maybe stuff might break out every once in a while, but people really love being there. And you capture that too in some of the concert sequences.
Yeah, the opening was you have to listen really closely to the opening. And I think that when people get a chance to see the director's cut, they'll understand that I was going for something very specific. It wasn't just kind of the sounds of the streets.
No, it's news commentary. There's all this. And we hear with President Reagan.
Ah, you were listening.
I'm sorry. This is what I do. Yes.
Hey, listen, you know, if you're not careful, it can blow by really quickly. And, you know, I try not to be heavy-handed about, you know, messaging and things like that. But, there, you know, I grew up in that environment at that time. And we were affected by a lot of choices that happened at that time, and I think these guys wrote about it. And, you know, not only did I experience a lot of things they wrote about, I witnessed it. And so the film is very, very personal, and if you look close, you'll kind of see some of those choices and experience some of those choices I made that not only kind of feed the story and surround the journey of the group, but my journey as well.
For those who don't know, even though the movie made $200 million, can you tell them what the movie's about?
In general, it's about a group of guys from Compton who had a dream, and they start. You're over here laughing. Hey, listen, it's so hard because you know what? It is about a group of guys who are very, very creative, who lived in South Central LA and Compton, who really changed the world. They changed the world with their art. And that's the short version of it. But what happens is, when I think about what the movie's about, I can't help but think about the themes. And there are a lot of themes. Well, there are a few things that kind of themes that that stands out to me, and it's hard not to mention them. You know, brotherhood is a theme, and we touch on a lot of things that, you know, we touch on so many things, like, of course, HIV. We touch on police brutality. We touch on freedom of speech. And it's so hard to do kind of a one-line description of what it is. And I think that's part of the reason why it struck a nerve, the movie, is because it's not just a rap movie and it's not just a normal movie. It's not just a music biopic. It covers a few things that I think are really relevant today. And, you know, the audience not only gets a chance to take a trip down memory lane, or if you're younger, gets kind of an entertaining history lesson, you get a chance to experience some things that may relate to your life. And that's the reason why sometimes it's kind of hard to do that.
No, I get that. But it's one of the things that it has that connects it to all, I think, almost everything you've done. It's a group of people who don't quite belong together who end up coming together. I mean, that's been something that's been recurrent in basically every film you've made, isn't it?
You know,
even The Negotiators, two guys who don't really belong together coming together, and some kind of uneasy butting of heads and exchange of ideas, and set it off to this, all these people who are constantly saying who and what they are.
Yes.
And claiming basically this kind of territory in these worlds in which they live.
Right.
And this is kind of like the mountaintop version of that movie, you know?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, you know, I think that they were brothers, though. And that's something that was very easy to see that they had in common. And similar goals to a certain extent. But when they ran into the management, that became something else.
One of the things I do think, though, and I like that idea of so much of these movies you make, you like people talking in movies and the way ideas naturally sort of come out in conversation, and these ideas can lead to conflict. Now, I guess I've always wondered, because I know you a little bit, never had a chance to ask you about where that comes from for you, that idea of bringing that to the screen.
Well, you know, I think that's, for me, more kind of making sure we are aware of the character. You know, it's really about the character and understanding where that character is coming from. And a lot of times when you're dealing with individualizing a specific character, you're not going to always have the same point of view. And that's what makes it really interesting. You know, we'll set it off. Jada Pinkett didn't always get along with Queen Latifah's character. You know, the same with Kevin Spacey and Sam Jackson, or Mark Wahlberg and Charlize Theron. But again, it just makes for really good drama. And the difference is, this is not fiction.
Yeah.
And so I had to really pull a lot of these stories out of Ice Cube and Dr. Dre and DJ Yella and MC Ren, and not just kind of create these things. A lot of the conflict and drama was kind of just built into that natural exchange and natural kind of flow of how artists work. And, you know, I was lucky to have the group, the surviving members of the group, to give me specific details on how they interacted in the good times and the bad times.
It's The Treatment. I'm talking to our old friend F. Gary Gray, who's come back with one of the best movies of this year and a movie that's been getting a lot of great attention. The movie, of course, is Straight Outta Compton. I guess I've got to say, what I find interesting about this, too, is that in some ways, it feels like a movie you've been waiting your whole life to make.
You know what? What's interesting, I would say, it's the most personal movie that I've made to date, for sure.
We can feel that.
The most important movie that I've made to date, for sure. But when I first got the script, I wasn't sure, you know, because I wasn't interested in glorifying gangster rap, and I wasn't interested in glorifying the street life. You know, I grew up in that environment where there was a lot of drug abuse and gang violence, and I lost a lot of friends. And so if there was, you know, before I read the script, I know how studios can work sometimes, and, you know, they can make good movies, but sometimes they can exploit, you know, create exploitive, you know, product. And when I heard it, I said, well, you know, this is a hard story to tell. There's five guys over the course of a decade. It's almost impossible to tell that story in a meaningful way. You know, you could do the music video version where you have the lowriders and the braids and the girls with the big booties and all that stuff and, you know, put together a great trailer and make money. And I said that to the first studio. I said, listen, you're going to make money off of this, but you don't need me to direct this movie unless it has some meaning and some meaning behind it. And
well, part of that view must have been that there have been so many versions, I shouldn't say versions, but movies with these kind of archetypes, stereotypes that you're talking about,
yeah,
that basically reduce the black experience of this thing where it's a gang here and these guys are lowriders. And again, even in those movies, nobody seems different. There's like one person who's like the bad guy and everybody else is ganging against him.
That's
we go
right.
back to Juice even, which is that movie that kind of did that. Or there's
sure.
so many movies
sure.
That have sort of boiled that thing down to where we know it's going to be. And the fact that each one of these guys is an individual in this, and there's that kind of thing that's going on, but it doesn't break them apart. I mean, that sort of brother thing you're talking about, that brotherhood, that family thing, really.
Yeah.
It's what finally must have been what made you want to do this movie, wasn't it?
Well, you know, that comes with experience. You know, when I read the first draft, it was written by Andrea Berloff. I was pleasantly surprised. It wasn't complete 100%, but what it did do is there was kind of a element of kind of a coming of age element that I didn't expect. You know, I kind of expected something that was exploitive and, you know, kind of something that you expect from a movie like this, just based on Hollywood's history with these types of movies. And I was just pleasantly surprised. I felt like it needed more work, but that was my way in. And to show the humanity behind the artist and the humanity behind the music. And, you know, I always say this, we know the when, you know, it's the 80s, it's a period piece. We know the what is the, you know, NWA and the group and controversial music. But I wanted to understand the why. And why would a 16-year-old write lyrics like "F the police"? And that was what was interesting to me. And it's a given that all of the elements of biopic would be there, sex, drugs, rock and roll, all the stuff that would entertain people. But I think the why and the context in which these guys wrote this music and created this music was important, and the heart of it. And when I pitched that, Universal, they went for it. They said, we want to make that movie. More specifically, Donna Langley over at Universal, you know, she said, "What movie do you want to make? And I pitched that, and I brought up the Iran-Contra scandal, and I brought up the fact that our neighborhoods were directly affected by the influx of cocaine and military weapons, and this shift in culture was very dangerous. It created a dangerous environment. It was very damaging, and these guys wrote about it. And I don't think they didn't consciously write about how it happened, but that is what makes it more than just a music biopic.
No, it's in the way it's like they're journalists covering a war in country.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's what made it that much more interesting to me. And when you have Oprah, who's not a big fan of gangster rap or who's not a fan of you know, just kind of some of the things. And we've heard her say, you know, not a big fan. And you know, to a certain extent, you're going to understand why she has a certain point of view of, you know, some of the music and, you know, the lyrics and how crass and, you know, edgy it could be. She wrote, she tweeted that it was very powerful and she learned something. And so there was a bit of history in there and it was educating without being preachy.
On that note, we'll take a break. My guest, who seems to know Oprah Winfrey, is F. Gary Gray. His new film, his most recent film as director, is a terrific Straight Outta Compton. This is a treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Want more of the treatment? Join us on Facebook and be part of the conversation. Search for the treatment and click like.
Welcome back. It's the treatment. I'm talking to our friend F. Gary Gray, who's been away from here way too long. He's done a bunch of movies between The Negotiator the last time he was here, but his most recent film, and look out for the director's cut of it, which is coming out January 5th on home video, is Straight Outta Compton. As I was watching this movie, I felt like I was watching Apocalypse Now.
Oh, that's a great compliment.
Because I felt like something like that was the way you were looking at this thing.
No question about it, man. That's a great compliment. I used to use that. You know, I didn't go to film school, so I would study.
No, when you told me that, that's shocking. You told me you didn't go to film school.
I didn't have the resources to do it, but I used to study that film and just the rhythm of that film and how visceral it was. Just coming up, when I was in my 20s, that was really, really an influential movie. So I'm glad you brought that up because that's a compliment.
No, I really feel like that, especially in that first hour. It's almost like, you know, in his way, Cube is kind of like Kurt. He's like Willard going in country to try to bring and funnily enough, Easy is almost Kurt's, you know? I mean, he's this king down there, you know? And we see him at the very beginning of the movie, by the way. And right after that opening aural piece, that collage you do, that's, again, it's not just sounds in the streets, although sound is very important to this movie.
Sure.
But just that stuff coming from everywhere. And you drop in pieces to remind us of that, although also a few quotes from Friday in there, too, but I'll let people find those.
Hey, listen, you have to have fun. That was the one thing that I'm very conscious of, the fact that, you know, people don't want you to finger wag and preach to them. You know, people want to be entertained when they spend their hard-earned money and they go to the movie. So little quotes from Friday and things like that just make people laugh. And it actually just frames the drama in a different way. You appreciate the drama in the more serious moments when you have a chance to take a breath and laugh. And that's how life is. Life is just not this string of awful events, at least for most people. And I grew up in a very dangerous environment at a very dangerous time, and we laughed a lot. That's what Friday is.
But I guess part of it too for me is just this whole thing of it feeling like there's a thing of it that has, I would say this applies to Set It Off as well, I think your best movies, have what I call the exuberance of pop. I mean, I feel like there's an excitement about things as they're happening.
Sure.
And this movie has that, really. I mean, it's almost like, as much as these things are awful, as these things are happening in the 80s and 90s, you couldn't wait to see how they're going to play out. I mean, in this weird way, I'm sure in a very intentional way, mm-hmm. the movie treats it in that way. Like, you don't know what's going to happen next because they don't know what's going to happen next because they're inventing all of this stuff. And the world is inventing its response to it.
That's right. It's point of view. And it's a very specific choice. You know, I don't want the audience to be ahead of our heroes, and I want the audience to experience it as it comes. And, you know, all of the choices you make, from the color palette to the camera angles and the lensing, really dictate how the audience experiences a movie. And I wanted it to feel that way. I didn't want you to know what was going to happen next, because that's how it is. When you live in a neighborhood like that, and you grow up in that environment, you are on the edge of your seat. And sometimes it's really, I don't know, it's edgy, and sometimes it's funny, but it's unpredictable.
And I thought that it's funny. Well, I guess it's kind of fun, too, is just hearing all the songs that became the samples for them, just hearing Dre spin those songs for the first time. I mean, that's a really interesting way, again, to not sort of like really declaim this stuff, but letting people find it, or not explain why yellow is called yellow. I mean, just things like that.
Right.
That you actually give the audience some room to come into the movie instead of explaining everything to them. And I guess what I was wondering was, how tough was it to do that? Because I guess at some point studios going, no, we got to break it down for people because this is something that happened 30 years ago, 25 years ago.
You have different conversations with the studio, but I got to tell you, they let us make our movie. And, you know, there are notes and conversations here and there, but part of the reason why I'm making my next movie at Universal is because we had such a great relationship. And it wasn't easy making this movie, but they had our backs. And so my philosophy is, people want you to take them on a journey in a world they wouldn't otherwise have access to. And so the dialogue should feel real. The environment should feel real. It should feel authentic, especially in a world like this. And so when I'm speaking to you and I'm in a neighborhood, I'm not going to explain to you what a gat is because you already know that. And I think those are the little things that people really love. If you make a movie about Apollo 13, they're not going to explain every scientific thing. They're just going to speak in their own language. And a part of it you won't get, but you'll feel like it's authentic. And I'll pick authenticity over explanation most of the time just for the experience. Sometimes you get more out of feeling like you're really there than just explaining everything.
What was it like the first time you met Ice Cube?
It was great, actually, man. The first time I met Ice Cube, it was on the set of the WC and the Mad Circle video.
Oh, my.
Dress Code. It was my very first music video. And Cube was this huge, hardcore rapper that, you know, most of the country was afraid of. And
well, I remember those stories. Like, everybody, every story about this, and you even touched on this, just some of the news clips you show, mm-hmm. there's this constant sense, I said the mainstream media, because I don't want the other things I could sure. say about, but hey. This kind of constant fear of black culture.
Oh, man.
Fear of black planet. It's kind of the, oh, almost yeah. be the name of this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Mos Def said that at that time, Ice Cube was the scariest brother, and he didn't say brother, but the scariest brother in America. And yes, East Coast and West Coast, especially during that time. And I was really excited to meet him because above and beyond his persona or his, you know, the way people perceived him as an artist, I thought he was a really good writer. There was something very visual about his writing. You know, you felt like you're in a movie. You know, you could smell the smells, you can taste the taste, you can see what he's writing. And that felt like that was a little different than the average hip-hop track where you can hear a person cleverly rhyme about things as opposed to being placed in an environment and experiencing a story. And so I was really, really happy to meet him.
Because I feel like that almost led you to Friday. Because also in addition to those skills you're talking about,
sure.
I mean, and they're really dramatic skills as much as anything else.
No question.
He's also, that stuff was always really funny.
Yes.
It was always really, you couldn't hear a Cube joint not laugh at it.
That's absolutely true. And if you look at, you know, the guys who influenced him, you know, he always says Muhammad Ali and Richard Pryor. And so, you know, you got a fighter that you should be afraid of, but you have someone who is extremely funny. And I was afraid to do Friday, to be honest with you.
Because
even though this, you know, I'm 24 years old. This is my first motion picture. I didn't have a degree in film, but I wanted to make a feature. But this is the guy from Boys in the Hood. And this is the guy who did America's Most Wanted. And he's a scary dude, but he wants to do a comedy. And so he places his career in my hands for my very first film, and it could have, there's so many ways to get that wrong. I'm glad we through those narrow choices, we somehow got it right, but it wasn't something that, it wasn't a natural progression from not only his work in music, but his work in movies. You know, Boys in the, from that character from Boys in the Hood to Craig on the Block, being managed by Chris Tucker, by Smokey, you don't have a natural progression there. And I think it's kind of a tall task for a first-time director, especially a fan.
But also somebody who had listened to him in a way that probably other people hadn't before, because they're too busy trying to, like, make him into something instead of listening to him and talking to him and finding out what he wants, which is part of what directing is, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, when you get to know Cube, you realize that he's one of the funniest guys you'll ever
and
meet.
And that he actually smiles all the time, which he never, until at that point in the movies, he had never smiled before.
Exactly. It's so funny. Yeah, I was doing an interview the other day with Shay, his son, and with Q, and he says, you know, his father's known for the frown. You know, that frown. And he wanted to make sure when he delivered the character Ice Cube, he wasn't frowning throughout the movie. But you're right. He had the frown. But when you spoke to him, what I recognized right away is his comedic timing and his wit. And that's what made me feel comfortable with doing the comedy, because I'm like, this guy's actually funny.
My guest, who I think has got over his fear of Cube in movies, is F. Gary Gray. His most recent movie is the spectacular Straight Outta Compton, it's The Treatment. I, as I'm talking about this, though, because this gets me back to this idea of so often in movies, there's one person who has a really, really strong point of view. Except in this movie, they all have a really, really strong point of view. I mean, that's, again, I'm saying that's, this to me feels like the movie that you put the most of yourself in and it just, you can feel the passion in this in a way that seemed unusual to me.
This movie was personal in a lot of ways, just my own taste. I mean, you know, a lot of times you don't see African-American men portrayed in a certain way, you know, where they kind of stand up for themselves. You don't see that often. You know, every once in a while you'll get a great Denzel Washington movie, you know, or Will Smith movie, but it's very
it's a black man by himself who stands up. You know, it's
that I mean, there's so many elements to a movie like this, you know, and I don't take anything away from the movies that preceded or movies, but I got to be honest with you. I'm tired of kind of seeing the enslaved black man. I'm tired of seeing, you know, brothers scraping and begging and compromising and things like that. And so, you know, to show that although they made mistakes, you know, these young men stood up for what they believed in, right or wrong. And that's the optics of that's very important to me.
But one of the things I like about this, and it's something that doesn't get discussed that often, is you show, for example, in the case of Ice Cube, he had a family. You know,
yes.
he had a father who taught him how to be a man. And so in so many of these movies, they leave that kind of thing out, and that these guys are all different guys, and what brought them together were these things that you talk about that made them brothers, but also made them stand out and create this kind of clash of egos that finally the center could not hold.
And that's what's, I think, strong about their story. It, you know, in front of the mic, in front of the camera, out off of the mic and off camera. And what I mean by that is their lives are just, it's a strong message above and beyond that. Ice Cube has been married for, I think, 25 years. You have Dr. Dre, who's been married for 20 years. And you see bits and pieces of that in the movie. And so when people want to point to just the art and just the music, I wanted to just give you a peek into their lives for real.
Obviously, a big part of it, too, is that, and I wonder how much of a part you had and you played in this, is this is one of the few black movies that wasn't sold like a black movie.
You know, I'm so happy that that is the case.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
I know. Absolutely. I drove down Highland Boulevard, and I couldn't believe I saw a Strata Compton billboard that was larger than Mission Impossible. And it was like there was the Strata Compton billboard, and it was huge. And then right under it was a kind of a medium to small size Mission Impossible. And I say, man, not to take anything away from that movie, it was a good movie, but it was just it's just something you would normally see the opposite. And so Michael Moses, Josh Goldstein, Donna Langley, Jeff Schell, they marketed this movie like it was a Marvel superhero movie. I had a meeting with Mike DeLuca not too long ago. Who used to be the head of New Line Cinema. And he said he loved Strata Compton. He thought it was fantastic. I said, you know, a lot of this came from choices you made 20-something odd years ago. Donna, myself, Ice Cube, we all started there. And big props to Mike DeLuca, who's now at Universal. So it's, you know, all this stuff is coming full circle. The beginning of my career with Ice Cube, now one of the most important films I've ever made with Ice Cube. It's something kind of poetic about it for me, and I'm enjoying every bit of it.
Gary, we're out of time. I can't thank you enough for doing this. It's always good to see you again.
Thank you. It's always a great interview, man. You always get me open. Sometimes I come and I'm a little cautious. I'm like, what am I going to say? I want to make sure I don't want to say anything I'll regret. Then you just loosen me up and I just start running my mouth. Thank you, man.
My pleasure. My guest who finally stopped folding his arms is F. Gary Gray's most recent film, of course, is Straight Outta Compton. Our recording engineer here at NPR in New York is Neil Rausch. His show is mixed by Kat Yor, is edited by Blake Vite, who's the associate producer. I'm just glad it's not Aftermath, the movie. It's The Treatment.
There you go.
Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. Da-da.